Welcome everybody to another life-changing episode of HomeKit Insider. You've got me, Andrew O'Hara, here with my pal, the hostess with the hostess. That's right, he is sitting on a throne of ding-dongs. It's Stephen Robles. How you doing, man?
All right. I don't even know what to think about that. I did like how you said this was going to be life-changing. I think, I mean, HomeKit stuff, it can change your life in a way, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
I like this the cynical take. You're like, whatever.
I am cynical today, just in and cynical. Out, man.
And we got some stuff to be cynical about, actually, a little later. That's going to be interesting talking about. It's the voice assistant episode. Got lots of different voice assistant news, from the Amazon one to another addition to the voice assistant world. I didn't think we needed another one, but here we are. And it's gonna be interesting. It's gonna be a good show. I'm excited. We actually had some 5-star reviews, multiple 5-star reviews. I want to say Sean from the UK. Hello there. Hoob Joan or Hub Joan. I don't know. Maybe that's a HomeKit reference. Hub Joan, but from Poland. That's awesome. International listener. Braden from Nova Scotia, Canada. That's awesome. And then Daft Dingo from Australia. All four internationals. The UK, Poland, Canada, Australia. We're all over the world.
Love it.
This is awesome.
Love it.
Very cool. Very cool. I've been to Nova Scotia. That was cool. I've been in the UK. We got a lot of news, Andrew. We got to get to it. Let's start off a little easy before we get worked up over these voice assistants.
I'm going to get all worked up.
I'm going to get a little worked up, too. I think we're going to see. One isn't a big I told you so, I think, but we'll get to that. Onvis, HomeKit brand, is actually coming out with some new products. They're going to update their contact sensor. It's going to be a CT3, and their contact sensor is going to have thread. So always nice to have another thread contact sensor out there, especially those kinds of battery-powered things. Thread is very useful. And they also have another device coming. It's very interesting. No set date on this. Possibly this month, May, the end of this month. But this is the 5-button controller, the Onvis HS2. Which will be a HomeKit controller. Now, we've got a few of these, like the Wemo Stage controller, the, the Nano Leaf, the dodecahedron?
Yeah.
Is that that?
Uh-huh.
Do they even sell it anymore? Can you even get it anymore?
I think so.
Is it still
as far
around?
As I know. Yeah.
I'm gonna go look for it but at some point while you're talking and confirm. But pretty cool, another HomeKit controller. So we'll see. Onvis, I don't know if you've had many Onvis products. I had that motion sensor, which was fine. Wasn't as fast as like the Philips Hue one, which the Hue is just lightning fast. But it was fine. You got any Onvis stuff? You got feelings about that?
I don't have any. What I'm interested in is honestly the contact sensor, and I want to pit it against like the Eve one and see how they compare. I want to know kind of, you know, as with Thread's rolling out, right? We've had limited support. Like some companies have adopted it, and they adopted it across many products, like the Belkin's Wemo line and the Eve line. But I want to know how it works with other brands too. Like maybe Eve and Wemo are just super good at what they do. And maybe Thread does not mean great reliability. Or maybe it does. So I want to try some other third-party devices with Thread and see how they all work together.
Yeah, I will say, so I Googled the Nanoleaf dodecahedron, which was their controller device. The Apple Insider video was the first result in Google search. I'll just say that. So
good.
There you go.
As it should be.
But I'm on Nanoleaf's website. It still has a page on here. And when I click shop, you can buy it with Canvas. Oh, no, here it is. The remote itself seems to be out of stock. It was $30, but it's out of stock now. It apparently is bundled with the Canvas Nanoleaf squares. So if you want to get that remote, they throw it in with that package. And that's $200 for like the panel. You get 9 panels, 9 of those squares. You had some of those, right? Didn't you test those, like the canvas type panel things?
Yeah.
What do you think of those?
Yep. I like it. I mean, I like all the Nanoleaf stuff. I mean, all of their lights have been great and reliable. I mean, I've got some plastered behind me here. I got the lines on the other wall, and just like you, I've got boxes of like their shapes that I've yet to commit on plastering right up somewhere.
Oh, an update. I just tried to add it to my cart, trying to buy something live on the air, as you do.
For sure.
And when you do that, it says the remote is out of stock, and so they don't include it in the package. So, I don't know, Nanoleaf, if you're listening, bring the remote back. I wanted one of those dodecahedrons, so I could say dodecahedron to people who come to visit my house.
Or a new version with Thread.
There you go. Boom. Yes, do that. I had a big reaction, and I came back real quiet. You have to be watching the video, youtube.com/HomeKitInsider. More news. Arlo, their indoor camera, their $99 indoor camera, is going to get HomeKit support. This is not HomeKit Secure Video. This is just HomeKit support, meaning you'll be able to see the camera in the Home app, use it as like a motion detector trigger and all that kind of stuff. You do need the Arlo Hub, as with other Arlo devices, if you want those cameras to be in the Home app. But nice to, you know, have more Arlo cameras in HomeKit support, $99. So, boom, there you go.
Nice.
Do you have the indoor camera?
I don't have their indoor essentials camera. I just have like their wireless ones, which I really like for outdoor. There's not that many wireless ones that work with HomeKit and work well with HomeKit. Mm-hmm. So I got the Floodlight Cam, the Ultra, which has like 4K video, again, stuff that HomeKit doesn't have.
Right.
And my other ones are all 2K. So I have like better resolution cloud recording. And I think higher resolution is more important for like outdoor cameras because you typically need to zoom in more to see things.
Right.
Versus indoor when someone can be like, you know, 5 feet from your camera. If you like mount these, you know, high, I feel like you just need the higher resolution to deal with the increased distance.
Right.
So I like it for that reason. Plus Arlo has other nice features of the security stuff, like their E911 and their image, like their AI recognition stuff is better than what we have in HomeKit. So for now, at least, I'm still sticking with some Arlo stuff for outdoors and still paying for it.
Gotcha. Okay. Move this up. So Decora from Leviton, this is Leviton brand, their Decora line of smart switches, has now added a no neutral wire required lineup to their switches, which is great. Again, I had the older house. That's where we just moved from. And you have very limited choices when you don't have a neutral wire in your walls. But now you have another.
I feel like this like rubs it. It like rubs the salt in the wound for you because you've been like looking for them for so long. And
I know.
Like you move out. And it's like, oh, here you go.
Here's an entire lineup.
Exactly what you needed. Entire line just for Steven.
Yeah, it's amazing. But what's interesting is, so these Leviton Decor switches, there's a switch, there's a dimmer, and they have, you know, a couple other things. You do need a bridge for these no neutral switches, which is interesting because the regular Leviton Decor switches, which I'm putting in the new house, are Wi-Fi only, do not require a hub. So interesting that these models do. And then there's also a maximum device per hub. It says 25 of the no neutral devices per hub, I guess. And I don't know if you can set up multiple hubs. So there is a limit there to the amount of switches you can have. But good option, especially I know a lot of listeners have written in over the years. I guess it's safe to say years. We've been doing this show. This is our second year of no neutral wire switches. So, Andrew, I'm struggling actually just because my Leviton switches, listen. The three-way switch situation, I just need to ask you real quick because it is still not solved in my new house, okay? Still not solved. Like, the electricians are done. They're like, peace, we're out of here. Figure it out because they just, like, cannot deal with it anymore.
Nice.
And basically, my three-way switches where I have a Wemo three-way switch, non-dimmer, and dumb switches, that works fine. Dumb switch can be in either position. Wemo switch works no matter what. Great. All the three-way switch locations that have a Leviton dimmer, which supposedly does work with three-way, cannot get it to work with a dumb switch no matter what. Like, they've switched the positions just in case there was one that was like the main pole like I talked about before. Didn't work. Now there's no power anywhere. They moved it back. Still, if the dumb switch is off, Leviton dimmer cannot control it. They said... The electrician, they read all the manuals and they were like, oh, you need those remotes. Andrew, remember those remotes that I bought like 10 of and then I returned them because I didn't think I needed them?
Yeah.
Well, the electrician said, yeah, you probably need those. So I bought those again. I bought 9 of those.
Nice.
And so they installed it with those and now nothing works. So there's the Leviton smart dimmer over here, the paired remote, the wired remote that's actually a switch on the other side of the three-way circuit. And now nothing works. Nothing turns on. And he was like, well, maybe you need to program it for it all to work properly. Andrew, what is happening? I don't know what to do. I mean, do you actually have, let me ask you this. Do you, Andrew O'Hara, actually have a dimmer switch that is smart in a three-way circuit with a dumb switch? And they're like, is it working?
Yeah.
What switch? What is the smart switch? Is it the Leviton?
I'm using the Brilliant smart panel, which works as a dimmer. And works with three-way setups.
And you got a dumb switch on the other side, and no matter what that dumb switch does, Brilliant's fine.
Yeah.
Do you have any Leviton dimmers in that kind of situation?
No. not for any reason. I just only have two three-way setups.
It's so dumb. The three-way switch is two switches. What? You just, what was that? You just went dark on the video.
This is what happens in my house. We have like random brownouts and it'll like kill the power to my key light for a second. So like my key light just went off and then back on.
I thought you were doing that for effect as we were talking about these three-way switches, like you were testing them or something. So again, nope. If you're watching on the video, Andrew went dark like Phantom of the Opera for a second.
Yeah, because you film in the pretty much in the dark except for a key light. It goes off and I'm gone.
Fair.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know what to do, man. I actually just set up my Wi-Fi network yesterday as we record. So I'm actually going to try and program that switch, the Leviton dimmer and the remote that supposedly works together with it. And we'll see if it works. It's the last ditch effort. Otherwise, I'm going to be switching out.
Honestly, if that is the case, I would never want to buy those. Like if you have to program it to make them work like offline, I would be furious. Like that just completely, you know, kills the experience. Bro. So I would not think that's it. Mm. I would hope that's not it. I hope that you have some other problem, if that makes you feel better.
Thank you. Thanks. Well, in the first one, because all the Lutron switches work, I haven't programmed any of those. They're not in three-way positions because the Lutron ones aren't three-way.
Mm.
If you want to do a three-way, quote-unquote, they tell you to put a Pico remote on the other location. So
sure. The
only wired three-way solutions are the Wemo, and that works right now, no programming, and the Leviton. And I guess, I don't know if it's the dimmer that's the issue. Like if for some reason I don't know if I'm going to put Wemos everywhere.
You could try putting in just a regular three-way no dimmer just to see if it fixes anything.
Yeah.
Just for the heck of it. It's not like you can replace an outlet, Steven. You've got that. Like probably.
I can replace the switches all day. I've been doing that.
Yeah. See, yeah. So you're fine. So try putting in another just regular three-way.
Like a Wemo. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that's the one that Wemo works. Yeah, the electricians like are so frustrated because they'll do a bunch of work and then I'll go in behind them and like try other things and like move switches around and then they come back and be like, bro, what'd you do? And I was like, I was just trying stuff, man. Just relax. Just fix it.
And then, I'm paying you here.
I know. I mean,
if I want to do this, then I'm going to try it.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I'll update you because I'm going to be doing that this weekend. So we'll see. We'll see how that goes.
Oh.
I did have fiber installed. I got internet. I have gig internet. The fiber came in the house. They ran it to the closet I needed to. And it's in my Ubiquiti Unify setup thing. So I have internet. It's amazing.
Nice.
Look at that. All right. Let's let's take a break real quick because we're going to talk about the Amazon Assistant and some things that came out in news that I'm so excited to rant about that. But before we rant about that, let's rant about something good, which is our friends at Hunter Douglas, the makers of the wonderful HomeKit Smart Shades, where you can live in comfort and style. Hunter Douglas makes those innovative shade designs, gorgeous fabrics, control systems so advanced they can be scheduled to automatically adjust to their optimal position throughout the day. You can use it to diffuse harsh sunlight. I'm doing a dramatic reading on this one. I don't know. I'm feeling a different energy.
So dramatic.
With this thing. You can cast a beautiful glow across the room, and you can enjoy the view outside the window while protecting your privacy inside your house. They have superior insulation, keeping you warmer in winter and cooler in summer, even lowering your utility bills. Or maybe it's that Goldilocks moment, which Andrew knows all about Goldilocks moments. And you take that and it's a perfect lighting in the room. And of course, Hunter Douglas has the Power View technology where it automatically repositions for the perfect balance of light, privacy, and insulation. Andrew, give me a dramatic feature that you like about the Hunter Douglas shades.
How about the dramatic feature of when my key light goes off and I'm cast into darkness because I used Siri to set my filming scene that closed my Hunter Douglas shades to make my room nice and dark.
Mm, very good, very good. So live beautifully with Hunter Douglas. You actually froze during that whole thing, so I really don't know everything that you said, but I know it was good, or whatever you said about the Hunter Douglas shades. So enjoy greater convenience, enhanced style, and increased comfort. And now I'm going to do this call to action in the most dramatic way possible. And right now, for a limited time, you can take advantage of generous rebate savings opportunities on select style. Visit hunterdouglas.com/homekit for details. That's hunterdouglas.com/homekit. The link is in the podcast description. I think they're going to like that. I think they like that reading. That's good.
You know, Steven, since we've been talking about Hunter Douglas, I just saw like an ad that they had like recently updated stuff for 2022.
Oh.
There was like some new Bluetooth like options, like
Okay.
Yeah. So I don't even know the details on all this. I literally just saw like a Twitter ad or something for Hunter Douglas shades. And I'm like, I got those. I love those. And it was like new for 2022, all new PowerView automation with Bluetooth. And I don't know. I don't know what the changes are, when it launched, but it still says HomeKit. It looks like all new stuff they've been working on. So if true, it's pretty cool.
All right. Very cool. Well, check it out. I do see. I went to their website and they have they say a new generation of smart shades.
Yeah.
So they might have some new stuff. So that's very cool.
And since we are talking again about Hunter Douglas,
yes.
I thought I had mentioned this before, and maybe I didn't, but someone mentioned it at one point. The ceiling fan company is not the same as the shades company. Oh. So the ceiling fan is Hunter Fans, and then Hunter Douglas is the...
Shades.
The shades. Yeah. So they are different companies.
I legit learned something new. Today I learned. TIL. I really thought they were the same company. And I always wondered why the ceiling fans weren't on their website. So it was like, why can't I go to Hunter Douglas and buy the ceiling fans that they make? Because they're not the same company.
I will say, it makes me feel, I mean, well, I knew this, but it should make you feel better because like the reliability of the ceiling fans was never great versus the reliability I have with the shades. So I'm like, man, it's funny how they're so rock solid with their shades and they can't figure out how to make their ceiling fans work 100% of the time. So it's because they're not the same people for anyone who is wondering.
That is good to know. I did not know that. So, okay. Very good. So if we trash talk the ceiling fans, well, we don't trash talk, but if we comment on the reliability, that is no reflection on Hunter Douglas, the makers of the smart shades.
Yeah, I thought I had said that. And then someone like tweeted at me like, hey, by the way, I was like, did we not talk about this? Or maybe we talked about it a long time ago, like when I originally talked about the ceiling fans before Hunter Douglas came on board, like maybe we talked about it then, but I'm like, I feel like we talked about that on the show, that they're not the same, but...
TIL.
Yeah, someone mentioned, so I want to make sure that was clear.
All right, well, I can't wait for this. We've talked a lot about Amazon's Assistant, and maybe why we've tried to eliminate it from our lives. And this report from The Verge says that Amazon has confirmed that Amazon and third parties, including advertising and tracking services, collect data from your interactions with Amazon's Assistant through Echo Smart Speakers and share it with as many as 41 advertising partners. That data is then used to infer interests and serve targeted ads on platform, both on the Echo devices themselves and off platform in web advertising. Also concludes that this type of data is in hot demand, leading to 30 times higher ad bids from advertisers, and Amazon directly confirmed with The Verge that it does use voice data from Amazon's Assistant interactions to inform relevant ads shown on Amazon or other sites where Amazon places ads. So I feel like all the people that I thought were wearing tinfoil hats that were like, it's listening. And I mean, it is saying that it is using your data when you interact with the device. It's not saying that it's listening constantly. And when you talk about beach balls to your friend, that it is using that for advertising. But when you do interact with Alexa and anytime it's active, it is using what you say to target ads to you.
I think it's ridiculous, man. This is ridiculous. Like, of freaking course. Like, did people think that these were so cheap for just no reason? Amazon was just being really kind. Of course this is a thing, and it's more relevant now than it like has been. Do you ever watch the John Oliver's Last Week Tonight?
I've seen clips, but I don't watch it regularly.
Okay, so like 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago maybe, fairly recently, he did one on this ad spending of how you can literally like identify people based on all this information that you get. And you can create such hyper-focused ads. You can build like literally individual profiles of a person and know so much about them, from like age, medical issues, all sorts of stuff, to literally sell them like as a person, an anonymous person, but sell them as a person to, you know, ad companies. So the fact that this data is being sold to 41 companies who then do other things with it, and you can combine that data with... Because you can combine data from multiple sources. So you can take this data they're getting from your Amazon and combine it with data that they're getting from your browser or from other places and join it together to create these profiles of people.
Yeah.
In John Oliver's thing, he literally created very specific ads and then ran them in the DC area.
I did see that. And
collected information, on all these senators and congressmen who had like clicked on stuff. And he's like, oh, we can.
Which specific person clicked on political ads for an individual candidate. Like he was able to like make those connections. Scary, like crazy.
Yeah. It was crazy. And he was like talking about how there's so little regulation around this. He can share like all of this stuff. And he like put it into an envelope and he was like, I sure hope people don't make a law that makes it illegal for me to do stuff with this really personal information.
Yes.
And you know, just kind of left it at that. But it just comes back to this. It is crazy how much, I mean, we saw this with the Cambridge Analytica stuff, with the Facebook things, and now there's your voice assistant that is taking that information and sharing it. Like, it is a big distinction between, like, saying it just in the air versus interacting with your speaker. But
right. But still.
Still, and how... You know, how long are these things like, you know, listening it like after you maybe it actually thinks you said the key phrase and then it listens for 30 seconds just in case. Right. And you had a conversation in that span of time about something that's going off to the cloud, like that is being used to profile you. So there's other way, like even if you didn't ask, but you said something or someone else said it and it heard it in the background. There's so much scary stuff here. And I can't believe that people use these devices in their house. I love how many things connect to them, but I just can't believe the amount of information they're able to get.
So I'm curious about a couple of things. One, I just did a cursory Google search. Nothing has come out yet about Google's assistant, but I have to imagine it is the same for them. Again, we don't have solid information on it, but when you think about the business models of companies like Amazon, Google, and Facebook, a large, large portion of their business model is advertising and being able to advertise directly to consumers where the interests match. This is why Facebook, I mean, they just announced that they're not, they're on a hiring freeze because their revenue is down, and they are attributing it a lot to iOS 14's like app tracking transparency stuff and the ask not to track thing on Apple devices, which, you know, we're not going to have to get into that. But just the fact that advertising and being able to target customers is such a big part of these companies' businesses. Duh. Like, of course, they're going to use as much information as possible. And again, when it comes to Apple's Home Assistant, I think there was a few years ago that there was an article saying for like diagnostic purposes that audio clips are reviewed by Apple people, you know, to troubleshoot. But now there is that pop-up when you set up a HomePod and when you set up Siri, are you okay sharing these audio recordings with Apple? Like, and you can deny it. Like, you can say, don't share my stuff with Apple.
Not only that, Stephen, but Apple goes like a step further because they could opt you in and then ask you to opt out or like pre-select, like agree and like kind of like funnel you that way. They literally pop it up as equal options and say, share recordings, don't share recordings, and make it completely free choice. Like, they're not trying to influence you to go towards sharing. I mean, because again, it's just for diagnostic purposes, so they don't really care other than anonymized couple second clips of data that they can review. So I think it's so much more private and secure. It's only used for internal purposes. Nothing is being shared outside. It's a super tiny clip, like they're literally like a couple words or something versus entire interactions. Yeah.
I mean, if it ever comes out, again, this is not the case at the moment, but if it ever comes out that they are using recordings from non-interactions with Amazon's assistant, I mean, the uproar. I mean, plus the amount of people that just be like, I told you so, like I knew it all along, all this kind of stuff. And it's unfortunate because this plays into people thinking that their phones are listening to them all the time. Like even just people with an iPhone. I have people that are just like, yeah, I know my phone's just listening to me all the time. Like they just assume it. And it's really not the case. But the problem is there's so many other avenues and companies that are so good at advertising, it feels like you are being listened to all the time. And I actually read this book, I think it was The Power of Habit. And it actually, there's a section of the book that talks about advertising and how Target, the retail store, really has nailed down their advertising and targeting game, which they'll use everything from, you know, when you use a debit card at Target, if that debit card is attached to your bank and you have an account with that bank where your email address is your login, that email address, it can be tied to. If you used it for your social network login, well, then it knows your profile on the social network. Like they can connect all those pieces of data without ever listening to you say a word. and they can know your shopping habits just because of those data point connections. You would basically have to use a different email address for every online account you use, like a different phone number. Like, you would have to, it's untenable to be able to do that. But I say that because in the book, it talks about Target wanted to advertise to pregnant women, and they wanted to send them like baby marketing and all this kind of stuff. And so they used shopping habits to figure out which, like when women were pregnant, what items they typically shopped for. And they began to send flyers to the homes of people that they believed were pregnant. And there was even a case where they started sending it to this one home that there was a teenage girl in it. And the dad got upset because, I can't believe you're sending this to our home. Like, how could you do this? Found out the teenage girl was actually pregnant, and just her shopping habits that Target was tracking could know that. Insane the amount of like connections these AIs and machine learning can make for advertising. And so, of course, Amazon is going to use whatever it can to target you even more, especially now that Apple is doing things to prevent some of that tracking. It's just, yeah, duh, of course.
Yeah. I mean, stuff like that, like sometimes they will know before the people know, just based on,
yeah,
you know, other things. Like,
it's crazy.
Based on like Google search history combined with shopping habits, like, oh, this person's likely, you know, pregnant or got this disease. Like, it can freaking know these things. It's nuts.
Because, you know, you think about with Amazon's assistant, one of the things that it's better at than Siri is kind of like those cursory, like, information requests. Like, how far away is the moon from Earth? Or, you know, what, how old was George Washington when this, you know, typically the Amazon and Google devices are better at those questions, but the fact is whatever you're asking for, like, could play into your interests, and they're going to use that to make those data connections. And if you did a Google search for a product and then you mentioned something about that activity or product in your assistant, that's why you're seeing Instagram ads. Like, honestly, that's why you're seeing Instagram ads for whatever it is, that thing that you are thinking of, even if you haven't outright, like, I want to buy this. You know, you don't have to do that anymore.
I know. Could you imagine saying, like, add this to my list or something? And then it's like, okay.
Absolutely.
Cool.
Absolutely. Yeah. And oh my goodness. Well, anyway, this is, I mean, duh. Like, I mean, I think we assumed this. It's now that it's confirmed, it's like, of course. And I think, you know, our listeners, again, if you have an Amazon assistant in your home and you just don't care, like, that's fine. But I do think it's important information to know, like, if you are a little skittish about all this tracking and advertising and stuff, it's clear that Amazon's assistant is doing it. Yeah, they just admitted outright that they are doing it. Well, and speaking of voice assistants, so Sonos, the speaker, they make the AirPlay 2 speakers. They actually have a new soundbar coming out, which maybe we'll talk in a second. But since we're talking about voice assistants, Sonos announced they're launching their own voice assistant. This is going to be the Sonos voice assistant on their products. The keyword, I can say it now because no one has these products yet, but you'll be able to say, hey, Sonos. Hey, Sonos will activate the Sonos voice assistant. And at launch, the voice assistant will work with Apple Music, Amazon, Pandora, Deezer, and Sonos Radio. Notably, Spotify and Google's YouTube Music are not on board yet for the Sonos voice assistant, so you will not be able to tell, hey, Sonos, play Spotify, but you can't with Apple Music. And, I mean, I just saw this and I was like, we don't need another assistant. Like, I really don't think a speaker specifically needs its own proprietary assistant for, like, all it's going to do is play music and maybe, like, pause. Maybe it can, like, pause stuff and play stuff. But why? Why, Andrew? Why are they doing
that? I don't know. And unfortunately, I think this is going to continue for a bit, you know, not just from Sonos, but from other players as well. One of the vacuums that I'm currently testing is that that Ecovacs D-Bot X1 Omni something along, some combination of all of those words are in there. And it has an onboard assistant on your robotic vacuum. So you don't need, like, it does have, like, you know, Siri shortcuts integration, right, but you can talk to the bot itself and you can just do things like, you know, hey, bot, find me. And if you're in its line of sight, it can come to you and clean the area that you're standing, which I can see its usefulness of. Sure. But at the same time, it's like, okay, the microphone's not necessarily in a good spot. There's other assistants and, like, there's, like, small benefits, but not every company is going to be necessarily as good at voice recognition and all of those things. It seems like,
right,
you know how like they white label products, right? Like they'll make like a USB-C hub and then 10 companies will come out with the exact same hub with their logo on it.
Yeah.
It's like recently in the last like year or so, someone made just like the voice recognition stuff and white labeled it for everybody just to build into all of their crap. And now we're getting all these random third party assistants built into products that we don't really need.
Yeah.
I can still see some like benefits of it because like if you want to control your soundbar and you know, you want to do it like through your voice, it can be kind of, you know, a hassle. I believe you can do it like talking to your HomePod to control your Sonos Arc, like your volume that way. Mm-hmm. But even recently I tried to do that and it was like yelling at me that it wasn't possible or there was a problem. Mm-hmm. So like, it doesn't work perfectly. So I can see having the assistant actually on the soundbar much more reliable in doing that. And to be honest, I would prefer Sonos's assistant over like, you know, Amazon's assistant on there. Because if you want an on-device assistant, Sonos, I believe, wouldn't sell that data. They're a premium brand, and they're not in, like, the search data market.
Right.
They're in, you know, that the hardware business, and they want to grow that and the trust of their users. Amazon is in the data business
right. By
a lot and selling you things or selling you. So they make sense for what they're doing. So I would trust Sonos more, but I don't know. It's a lot. It's confusing. We don't need multiple in one house. That's what I'm struggling with my grandma right now.
Right.
Is I'm putting in a HomeKit doorbell, which means I need a home hub. I'd rather use a HomePod mini, but I don't want to put a Siri speaker when she already has an Alexa speaker. And if I switched it to a HomePod, she's not going to remember to use Siri instead of HomePod or Amazon's. So it's a mess.
Yeah. I guess, again, in the light of this Amazon Assistant stuff, if there was either Amazon Assistant or Sonos is, you know, you would have more privacy with Sonos. But I feel like if a company's going to go into this, like this is very different for Sonos, like to be able to have to support a voice assistant, all the machine learning and recognition, troubleshooting, diagnostics, like it's just splitting the attention where I think they could have just done Siri because Apple allows third parties now to do the Siri integration, like Ecobee thermostat with the voice assistant. You can do Siri right there on your Ecobee. I'll just do Siri on the soundbar. Now, again, I don't know if Siri would work with like Amazon Music and all that. And I don't know if Apple allows companies to do like their own Siri commands for, you know, like, you know, hey.
For their device.
Like, I don't know if you could do the, hey, Apple's assistant, play Spotify on my Arc. Like, I don't know if the Arc can do that, like proprietary commands. So I guess.
Like when you're using Siri on like the Ecobee, you can only use it for everything you can do on the HomePod. You can't do anything Ecobee specific. You can use its HomeKit commands, but I can't do anything further. So like with the Sonos Assistant, I don't know if you'd be able to like switch, you know, inputs or something. I don't even know if you can ask questions to it. Literally, it could just be for controlling playback and volume. Like that could be, you know, all it does.
Which this seems unnecessary.
It seems like a lot of dev work for that, but also like it also seems like a whole lot of dev work to try to replace the other assistants that are out there.
Right.
I don't know. It's curious. They could be like Apple's doesn't do enough because you can only funnel through a HomePod and you have to buy a HomePod to do it, to use it with the Sonos product, which seems not ideal. And then Amazon is selling your data to anyone standing on the street corner. So you have two, you know, opposites.
Get
like,
your
I
data.
Guess your only option is that just an old timey corner. Get your data here.
Yeah,
get your data here.
Get your data
is your
here.
Kid pregnant before you know it? Let's go ahead and get
50 cents. Yeah.
50 cents
a user. Get all the data. We should do a spoof video.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm with you. So we'll see how it goes. We'll see how it plays out. I think it will be coming to like current Sonos products. So I think you could like get it on the Arc and stuff through.
I'd assume so. Yeah.
Software updates.
Anything with a speaker or a microphone.
Yeah. And speaking of which, Sonos did also announce, or this was leaked actually. Someone at The Verge is getting
not
like,
announced.
None of this is announced. This is all The Verge getting these leaks. But Sonos is going to release a lower priced soundbar. So they have the Arc as their flagship soundbar, most expensive, the Beam right there in the middle. And now they're going to have something called the Sonos Ray. It's going to be $249, comes below the Beam, no microphone. Curious. So like you won't do any kind of assistant stuff with the Beam or with the new Sonos Ray specifically. And it will support Dolby Digital Audio, but not like Atmos and stuff like that, because it's going to be much smaller. You can pair it with other Sonos speakers to do a 5.1. You know, you could do like Sonos Ones in the rear and all that kind of stuff. So you can pair it with other Sonos stuff. And I thought this was interesting. It connects to your TV via the optical cable, which is something that recently it's been HDMI over the ARC, HDMI part, the audio return channel. You connect the Sonos Beam and the Sonos ARC through that HDMI connection. But this one, the Sonos Ray, I don't know if it's because of size or what, but it's going to be an optical cable.
Or cost? I don't know.
Yeah. So, I mean, TVs still have that. I mean, you can still, on most TVs, I don't know about all TVs.
I have not had as good of an experience. And the second project that I'm working on at my grandma's house, aside from installing a new doorbell, is putting in or fixing her soundbar. Because she can never get it to respond. Like, when she wakes her TV and controls the volume, they never communicate well over optical. It just is, it's been a bad experience, and she has to use like multiple remotes, even when things are like programmed.
Yeah.
So I'm switching it to talk to her soundbar over ARC, and it should be much, much better.
Yeah.
Like, optical is
weird.
It's a choice, I guess.
It is a choice. And again, the benefit of HDMI is devices can communicate to each other, control each other through the HDMI. Optical is pretty much just like a dumb audio out type thing. You usually have to set your TV to like only do the audio out, don't use the TV speakers, and it can be weird. So we'll see. And maybe it's for older TVs. Again, this is their low-end soundbar, you know, maybe targeting people who haven't updated their TV in a while, and optical is the way to do it.
I know. And plus, this gets them in, right? Because you buy this, you like it, but then it's like, oh, if you want better sounds, you just pop on two Sonos Ones in the back.
Boom.
Sonos One SLs in the back. You know, add the bass to really improve it. That's how you do it. And then you end up spending still like $800 by the time you're done with your setup.
$800 just for the subwoofer. That thing is $800 just on its own.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, anyway, I have a white Sonos Arc of like right behind. I should go get it. Okay, hold on. Give me 1 second. Talk amongst yourselves.
Talk amongst yourselves. Okay. How's everyone doing today? Just well. Oh, look who's here.
Whew, this thing's heavy, man. So this is, I got this at Best Buy. This is the white Sonos. I don't know how I'm going to open this thing. You got to go to youtube.com/HomeKit Insider and watch this episode. Man, this thing is heavy.
How you open it? It's so easy to open. They have some really nice boxes.
The box is really
like,
nice.
They're fancy.
There's like these little like lock switches on the ends, and they're covered with tape. So let's see. All right, got the top off. Here is a white Sonos Arc. It's coming up right now. I don't want to drop this thing. Phew, look at this thing, man.
Everyone listening on audio is really, they've already skipped this section.
They're already on the next chapter. I'll edit out some of the dead time, but oh my goodness, it's so heavy. Anyway, this is what a white Sonos Arc looks like, and it's pretty nice. I really like it. And on the back, you got the Ethernet, power, and HDMI for Arc, no optical. And do you connect your Arc with Ethernet, or you just rely on the Wi-Fi?
Just Wi-Fi.
Yeah. Oh my god, this thing is so heavy.
Did I ever tell you that our freaking rabbits like to control the volume on the Arc?
The heck? That was a rabbit.
Dude.
Doing that.
Well, obviously they can use Siri, and they just... No, I'm kidding. They we let them run around, and recently we gotten two new bunnies. We have Twix and Marshmallow, and they're like brown and white, and... Especially Twix. She climbs up in front of our TV. I don't know why she likes to climb up there, but she loves to climb up in front of the TV, and I swear she knows where the buttons are, and she just puts her head on it, and she'll like hit it, and she'll turn the volume either all the way up or like all the way down, and I'm like, stop that. And I'm like trying to find a remote to, you know, stop the volume and also like move her from the soundbar. But it's every time that is out, she loves to jump up there. And I feel like she knows what she's doing, and she does it just to screw with me.
Oh, she knows. Andrew, I think I broke this box. Okay, tell me about your NFC tag video while I try to fix this box. Go ahead.
Oh, Steven. Okay, so we got another video that'll be out by the time you guys are listening to this, and you guys can go and watch it. We were coming up with some new ideas for video content, and my last video that I did on NFC tags did super well. So I wanted to do another one and come up with some other fun ideas. So some of these are like home related, some shortcuts related, but random stuff that I had tried to come up with to automate using NFC tags. So first idea I walked through in the video is sending a text with driving time. So I put a little NFC tag in the car tap it with my phone, and it'll automatically pre-populate a text message. It'll get the route going home and calculate how much time, including with traffic, it'll take to get there. Then it'll take that amount of time and send it to my wife saying, hey, I'm on my way home. I'll be there in 22 minutes. And boom, off it goes. So one NFC tag idea. Another one was setting focus modes. So being able to put a like NFC tag on your desk, and while you are working, you know, you sit down, you go to work, maybe you have something you're really trying to get done and you want to switch your focus mode to cut down on distractions. Set up a little NFC tag, tap it with your phone, and immediately go into either a specific focus mode that you created or just a generic do not disturb. And if you wanted to get fancy, you could also create a conditional to undo that focus mode if you tap it a second time. Or you can just manually turn it off. But a quick, easy way to initiate a focus mode and get stuff done. We were talking about logging things, and Steven had his fancy water bottle from last week, his Hydrate Spark, something like that. And we had talked a little bit about logging, you know, water by using an NFC tag. So every time you tap on, like put it on the cap of your water bottle or something, tap it, and boom, you just logged a certain amount of water that you drink, like say a whole water bottle or half water bottle, whatever like that. Taking it further, you can go ahead and log things like coffee. So if you have a Keurig or an espresso, I hope it's not a Keurig, but if you have one, put an NFC tag on it, tap it every time you make a cup of coffee, and you'll automatically log in the health app that you had a certain number, 120 milligrams of coffee, whatever it is in your standard roast that you use. Or logging something else like medicine.
Or like 1,000 milligrams of caffeine. I have a lot of caffeine, I'll just say.
Well, that you just have a lot of taps. Each cup won't contain 1,000. Every time you tap it is another cup of coffee with another 120, 200 milligrams of caffeine in there. Or if you want to do something like medicine, if you have problems taking your medicine, create like a reminder that pops up every single day to take your medicine. And then every time you tap on your medicine container with your phone, it can automatically checkmark that reminder off for you that you did it for the day. So you know you took your meds. It's another little option like that. Wes suggested generate a packing list. So create a list in the Notes of the Reminders app of things that you always take on like a vacation, and then stick an NFC tag inside of your luggage. And then every time you go to pack, every time you're going on a trip, you pull out your luggage, tap on it, and you'll automatically get your packing list popped up for you that you can go through and mark things off and make sure you got them. So I thought that was a cool idea. Finally, one of my favorite ones is you can use shortcuts and like your Apple TV and stuff all together. So this is like the combination of like Siri or shortcuts and NFC and your Apple TV, your Apple Watch, fitness, all these things. But putting an NFC tag on like your workout bike or your treadmill, and then you go and get on your cycling bike, you tap on this NFC tag, it'll wake your Apple TV, it'll open the Apple Fitness app and be ready to go to. You just click yes to pair your Apple Watch and choose your workout. So it just starts your workout stuff really easily, all with just that tap of an NFC tag. You have other options in there, like turning on, like maybe you want to have it ask you what you want to do. Do you want to watch something, or do you want to go into fitness? And you can actually choose which way you go, if you want to go into fitness and do that, or if you're just going to watch a TV show while you bike. So you can even have like a conditional brought up and a list of choices for you to choose between, and then it'll go ahead and launch that app on your Apple TV. So if you want to tie in your HomeKit accessory at the same time, we have our bike right in front of our, like our living room window. So we have the shades open often during the day. When you're biking, you don't necessarily want the window open to the world. So you can shut the shades or shut them halfway, anything like that when you go to work out. So yeah, so those are some different ideas to use with your NFC tags. You got any ideas,
Steven? Those are awesome. Pretty much those. I love the NFC tag stuff. I actually have an NFC tag in my car to resume playing a podcast through Pocket Casts. And so, I love the text home. I actually have that shortcut on my Apple Watch, so I can tap it and it does a text to my wife with how many minutes I am away from home. And I use the NFC tag to resume playing a podcast, which is cool. For a long time, I had another NFC tag by my bedside that kind of did like an evening routine, you know, dim the lights, turn off lights in other parts of the house. And it was just nice to just be able to kind of like scan it, because I was about to put my phone on the charger anyways, so I just do that. So I love the NFC stuff. It is very cool. I wish the Apple Watch could do NFC tag automations soon. You know, Watch has an NFC thing. You do Apple Pay. I'd love for the Apple Watch to be able to trigger those sometime soon. Very cool. But we'll put a link to that video. I don't like saying video in the show notes. I don't know. All right, let's try and hit two listener questions real quick. David sent us an email. He was asking about water sensors, like water leak sensors. And he had some stipulations that basically the product he wants doesn't exist just yet. But he wants a water leak sensor that's HomeKit compatible, works without a hub, works on Thread, sends water that drips onto the sensor instead of just flooding the sensor, and uses a small battery. Now, there is the Akara one, but that requires a hub. There's the Eve Aqua, but it's not small, and it's not, you know, I don't think it would do, like, drips onto a certain point.
It doesn't use a battery, also.
It doesn't use a battery, right? You got to plug it in. So I recommended, and you can say if you have another one, Andrew, the Fabaro water leak sensor, which I think ticks most of these except for Thread. Fabaro one does not have Thread. And I don't know if that will detect a drip. I don't know if it has to have like standing water for it to trigger those basically, little pins or if
it needs more than a drip. Because there's the two pins, the two contact sensors that are below it that are pressure sensitive. So as soon as enough moisture goes for those two pins to touch each other, it'll trigger. So a single drip is not going to be enough. I mean, technically the Eve one would work with a drip if it hit the cord.
You could like curl the cord.
So I mean if you have it underneath something. Well, if you wrapped it around a pipe or something, maybe, like, you know, maybe that would work. Like, run it, like, right underneath of a pipe and, like, tape it into place. Maybe that would work. But that's you have true. To plug it in.
Right.
So
there's not really a product that matches all of it.
No, correct.
No. Well, you could try maybe a combination of the Fabaro and, you know, the Eve water guard. You know, the cable is pretty long, and you can extend it. You can get, like, multiple 6 foot or even longer. You know, you can have the sensing cable be very long. So maybe if you have a plug anywhere in the vicinity of where you want to detect this leak, and then you just run the cable to that point, maybe that's could be an option. Because I think that also has Thread, right? Doesn't the Eve water guard didn't get Thread?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And since it's actually wall powered, it can act as a Thread router. The thing is, like, for a lot of these, like, the places that you would want to put a, so like the Eve one is great, laundry rooms, basements, things like that, perfect. But if you're looking under the sinks, unless it's a kitchen sink where you have a power outlet for a disposal, you don't have an outlet available. So at least not like under the sink. You have maybe like next to the sink where you use like a hairdryer and then route it underneath like manually, which would technically work. But I feel like we do need a good Thread-enabled one to put under sinks. If that was the case, I would buy one for every sink in the house and put them under the sinks.
Our last question, this is from Travis on Twitter. He says he has an opportunity to do a smart home setup in a large home, about 5,000 square feet with a basement. He was wondering, does HomeKit have any limitations? There would be over 200 light switches and such. He actually looked up, I did a follow-up, and apparently some of the hub devices, even like Lutron, there is a maximum number of devices per hub. But as far as HomeKit goes, I told him I don't think there's any max limit on devices. Andrew, I don't know what your device count is right now, but I think you can go way over 200 HomeKit devices in a home.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, he's saying there it'd be over 200 light switches specifically, not even like
everything else.
Other accessories. So it would just be light switches. Your limitation is kind of what his part two is your freaking home app. It seems like it's terribly designed if you have more than just a couple devices per room. And Apple tried to clean it up in the last couple of years by putting sensors into the little bubbles on the top instead of the tiles down below, but I still think it is messy. And if I go into some of my rooms, it is really burdensome to like open the home app, swipe a bunch of them, which seems slow, to choose the room, or use a drop down and scroll and choose a room. And especially if you're looking at 5,000 square feet, you're gonna have a lot of rooms, and it's gonna be a lot of swiping, or you have to tap it and scroll to find your specific room on there and like identify it correctly, go to the room, wait for your accessories to like load a moment, and then scroll to find your accessory in that room. It's a pain in the butt. So yeah, you need to be using a third party home app or at least like properly choosing favorites that you use most often. I don't think there's any limitations in HomeKit. I think you should be fine, especially if you have a few HomePods and Apple TVs around the house that are able to make sure everything's connected properly. There should be no limitations with the HomeKit stuff other than the individual manufacturer hubs.
Right. And last question from Travis. Do any recommendations for Apple TV HomeKit apps? And the only one I could think of that would be useful is HomeCam. I think it's from our friend Aaron Pierce. And that's where you can view multiple HomeKit cameras at once on your Apple TV. It's an app for the TV you can download. Other than that, I don't know of any other good HomeKit apps on there, do you?
No, not really. HomeCam is really nice because not only can you view the cameras, but when you go into that room, you can control the accessories that are in that room. So even though it's like specifically kind of tailored around the camera, it has more functionality than a standard just like camera viewer. So I still think it's worth checking out. There's other random ones that I've seen, but that's probably the best option for the Apple TV right now.
Gotcha. Oh, well, good questions. We'll keep them coming. Listeners, tweet at Andrew and myself. Our Twitter handles are in the show notes. Keep those 5-star rating reviews coming. We'll give you shout outs at the top of the show. And you definitely want to watch this episode on YouTube, you know, trying to watch me open the Sonos Arc thing, stuff like that. You can go to youtube.com/HomeKit Insider and subscribe to the channel there. Yeah, and as always, thanks for tuning in. We'll catch you next time.
See ya.